If you were here on Good Friday, you will remember that we had a tour around Jerusalem and its environs. And now we have come this morning to the garden and the tomb. Casting our mind further back, you remember last Sunday we celebrated the triumphant entry into Jerusalem of Jesus the King. The people had thought he was going to be the one who would free them from Roman oppression. But this triumph was short-lived. As the events of Holy Week unfolded, the crowds turned against Jesus. It seemed that Jesus would not, after all, fulfill their hopes and their dreams. And the week ended with Jesus being betrayed by one of his closest followers and being denied by another. And he was handed over to the Roman authorities. He was falsely accused and he was violently executed as an enemy of Rome. Triumph to disappointment to despair in the space of a few days. But just 2 days later, less than 48 hours, the situation was to change yet again. Jesus had been executed. He had been crucified. He had died. His body was hurriedly buried in a sealed tomb, which was cut out of solid rock. And he lay from sunset on the Friday until dawn on the Sunday, the third day. This is the third day. This is Easter Day. This is a day that we celebrate the resurrection of Jesus Christ. It was on this day, over 2,000 years ago, that Jesus was raised from death to life. It's a familiar story, the familiar ending to the events of Holy Week. In the Bible, there are four Gospels written by four different Gospel writers. And each one writes an account of Holy Week. And each account is different in some ways, each writer emphasizing what they see as important, what touched their hearts. But we can draw together from these four Gospel accounts a sequence of events that may have happened that day. Early at dawn, some of the women from Jesus' group go to the tomb. The women discover the tomb to be open, the stone rolled away, and Jesus' body is not there. An angel appears who explains the situation and sends the women to tell the others. The women's story is met largely with disbelief. Peter and John, two of the disciples, go to the tomb to investigate, followed by Mary Magdalene. And they find the tomb to be empty, apart from the folded grave clothes. And then after Peter and John have gone back to hiding in the room in Jerusalem, the risen Jesus appears, first of all, to Mary Magdalene in the garden. And then later that same day, Jesus appears to his followers at various times and in various places. This morning, I want to read Matthew's account of the resurrection. And with some help, I hope, we'll recreate the scene in the garden right here. So, what I'm going to do is I'm going to move this aside so we can see the scene in the garden. And we'll start to read. Now, you might find it useful to find a Bible in the seat in front of you and look up Matthew's Gospel. You might want to follow the reading because it might get a wee bit confusing as we go through it. You might want to read ahead and see what's going to happen next. It's Matthew's Gospel. I'm going to start reading at verse 27. At chapter 27, verse 62. Hear the word of God. Matthew writes, "The next day, which was a Sabbath, the chief priests and the Pharisees met with Pilate and said, 'Sir, we remember that while that liar was still alive, he said, "I will be raised to life 3 days later. Give orders then for his tomb to be carefully guarded until the third day, so that his disciples will not be able to go and steal the body and then tell the people that he was raised from death. This last lie would be even worse than the first one." "Take a guard," Pilate told them. "Right, I need some guards. Who would like to be a guard at the tomb? I need two. I've got one volunteer, right? Fall in here. I need another volunteer to be a guard. Who would like to be a guard? Matthew, I'm sure you would love to be a guard. Oh, well, you can be something else. Oh, you're so shy. Right, up you come. I've forgotten your name.
Scott,
right. Right, okay, so I've got two guards, right? You just stand there a second. What do you think guards have? Swords. Well, oh no, not swords. This is important guard duty. You've got to have a... What's that?
Spear.
Spear, right. Are you left-handed or right-handed? Right? Right, we need to post a guard, right? One at each side of the tomb. Come on, I need a guard here. Come on. You call that marching? Come on. Get over here, right? And stand there. Now, you've got to stand. Let's stand a wee bit so they can see the floors, right? 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 Okay, right now. Ever vigilant, standing and watch you don't poke your eye, that's quite sharp. Take a guard, Pilate told them. Go and make the tomb as secure as you can. So they left and made the tomb secure by putting a seal on the stone and leaving the guard on watch. After the Sabbath, as Sunday morning was dawning, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went to look at the tomb. Right then, I'm looking for two Marys. I think there's two sitting in the front row here. Excuse me a second. So they went to look at the tomb. Now, you think they were happy? No, they would be kind of sad. So there's a couple of scarves for your head, so you can cover your head, because what you're in mourning, are you not? Right, I don't know how you do these things. You do it like a nappy or something, and you put it over your head and that sort of thing, right? Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went to look at the tomb. Right? So you've come to look at the tomb. That's good. You're doing good looking there. Suddenly, there was a violent earthquake. We need an earthquake. Who would like to be an earthquake? Oh, no, I can do better than that. Matthew, you'd love to be an earthquake, wouldn't you? Right, you come over here to the microphone. I bet everybody else wishes they'd waited for this one. Right, see what you do is you hold it up to the microphone. You don't need to shake it too much because... Right, so you're the earthquake. So there was a violent earthquake. I don't see anybody moving about though. So then there's an earthquake. You've got to be holding on to the seat in front and things. Come on. Right. Hold the earthquake just now. Hold the earthquake just now. Right. And an angel of the Lord. I need an angel. An angel. Who would like to be an angel? I don't know. Who would like to be an angel? Would you like to be an angel, Kamal? A very important job. No? They want to be an angel. Somebody want to be an angel? Want to be an angel? You come and be an angel, right? Right, I've got an angel. Right, wait a minute, we get the angel. It says here, Rebecca, right, but she's just an angel. She's just an angel. Let's see what it says here. It says that the angel's and his clothes were as white as snow. Can you put that on? Make sure we get it the right way around so you don't have the ticket up the front. Right. There you are. Right. So you're an angel. Right. Pull that right down. So there we are. Right. Now you go and stand. You go and stand beside the tomb over here. Right. You're an angel. Right. Now what you're going to do is you're going to roll the stone away. So this is the stone, and you're going to roll it away over there, just about there, and then you're going to let it down flat and sit on it, right? When I tell you to do it, and I read the story, I'll come and show you what to do. Suddenly, there was a violent earthquake. A violent earthquake. Hold it up to the microphone, because they're not moving about enough. That's a violent earthquake. And an angel of the Lord came down from heaven and rolled the stone away and sat on it. Roll it away, roll it away. Roll the stone away. Now watch it don't crush the flowers when you let it go down. Right, oh, excuse me a minute, Scott, there we are. Rolled the stone away and sat on it. So you sit down there on the stone. Well done. The guards were so afraid that they trembled and became like dead men. What does a dead man look like? He's certainly not standing up. You've got to lie down, so... That looks more asleep than dead, Scott. I looked like dead men. The angel spoke to the woman and said, Rebecca, if you stand up, stand up. I'm going to stand it, and you're going to take the two women over to the tomb and show them the tomb. I'll come and show you in a minute. The angel spoke to the woman. You must not be afraid, he said. I know you're looking for Jesus who was crucified. He is not here. He has been raised, just as he said. Come here and see the place where he was lying. So what you do, you take these two over here. Come over here and have a look inside. Right? And show, let the others see. Show the others what's inside. See the place where he is lying. Now, go quickly and tell his disciples. So point over there, point over there, point. Just point over there and say, go quickly and tell his disciples he has been raised from death. And now he is going to Galilee ahead of you. There you will see him. Remember what I have told you. So they left the tomb in a hurry, right? You've got to leave the tomb in a hurry and hurry, right? Leave the tomb. So they left the tomb in a hurry, afraid and yet filled with joy, and ran to tell his disciples. Suddenly, Jesus met them and said, I don't have a Jesus in this, so you've just got to imagine that it's happening over there. Suddenly, Jesus met them and said, peace be with you. They came up to him and took hold of his feet and worshipped him. Do not be afraid, Jesus said to them. Go and tell my brothers to go to Galilee, and there they will see me. While the women went on their way, some of the soldiers guarding the tomb went back to the city and told the chief priests everything that had happened. Some of the soldiers who had been guarding the tomb... You better have a look in the tomb and make sure it's empty before you go back. So you've got to report, remember. Right? So have a wee look. Mm-hmm. Right? So you can march back to Jerusalem as well. March. Come on. Slow arms. March properly. Thank you. Right? Where did we get to? Guarding the tomb. Went back to the city and told the chief priests everything that had happened. The chief priests met with the elders and made their plan. They gave a large sum of money to the soldiers. Now, I don't have a large sum of money either, so you can forget that. A large sum of money to the soldiers and said, you are to say that the disciples came during the night and stole his body while you were asleep. And if the governor should hear of this, we will convince him that you are not, that you are innocent, and you will have nothing to worry about. The guards took the money and did what they were told to do. And so that is the report spread around by the Jews to this very day. Amen. And may God bless us this reading of his word. So for us, with the benefit of 2,000 years of Christian teaching and 2,000 years of hindsight, it's quite clear to us what was happening on that first Easter morning. But the people who were actually there at the time, the people who were caught up in these events, did they know what was going on? Everything that happened must have come as a big surprise to them. A bit like the earthquake. So what about the emotion that was in these people on that first Easter morning? What were they feeling? These people who were involved. Let's hear from some of these people as they tell us their story. First of all, we hear from the guard, one of the guards who was on duty at the tomb.
I I was one of the soldiers Pilate sent to guard the tomb where that Jesus had been buried. He'd been crucified the day before, and he died quite quickly, so I'd heard. Two of his friends had taken his body and put it in this tomb. A bit posh for a common criminal, I thought. Maybe there was more to this Jesus. Anyway, orders is orders. We were to guard the tomb and make sure none of Jesus' followers came and stole his body. These Jewish priests who were organizing us said that this Jesus had predicted he'd come back to life 3 days later, after he died. So we were to stay there on guard for the next 3 days. The last thing they wanted was for his body to go missing and his followers to claim he'd been resurrected. The tomb was sealed, and we were left in charge. It was a bit cold at night, but at least it had stopped raining. It was just about daybreak when it all happened. There was an earthquake, not a bad one, but enough to knock us off our feet. Then this guy, dressed in white, came along and pushed the stone away from the tomb. I remember thinking, oh no, now we're in trouble, when I must have passed out. I could only have been out for a few seconds. When I came to, the man in white was talking to some women and showing them that the tomb was empty. I heard him say something like, he's not here, he's been raised. Then the women were sent on their way, and the guy in white just seemed to disappear. We checked the tomb before we went back to report. You know, the shroud from the body was still lying there, all folded up. That got me thinking, why steal the body and leave behind the only thing of any value? In fact, if you're moving a dead body, it's always easier to have it wrapped in something. I know, I've recovered plenty of bodies from battlefields in my time. Leaving the sheep behind didn't make any sense. We went first of all to report to the Jewish authorities. It was them we were working for. I remember Pilate washing his hands of the whole affair. I got the impression he didn't want any more to do with this Jesus. In fact, if Pilate had had his way, he wouldn't have been executed in the first place. But these Jewish priests, I thought they'd be mad when we reported what had happened, but they seemed more scared than anything else. Then they gave us money, quite a bit of money, in fact, and told us to say that it was Jesus' supporters who came in the night and stole his body while we were asleep. And they promised to square everything with the governor so we wouldn't be put on a charge. Of course, we took the money, but I knew there was more to this. Funny business.
I'm the angel who was sent that first Easter morning to sit by the tomb. It was my job to roll the stone away and tell people that came that Jesus had risen. It was so exciting to be chosen for this job, to be the one to declare the good news. I imagined a huge crowd of people, all cheering and rejoicing as I declared the good news. Everyone has their 15 minutes of fame, and this was going to be mine. The resurrection was all part of God's plan. Jesus had tried to explain it to his followers, to let them know what was going to happen. But either they hadn't understood, or they'd forgotten what he had told them. It seemed like I was the only person there that morning who knew what was going on. In fact, apart from two women, I was the only person there that morning. Where were all the crowds? I suppose it was a scary time for Jesus' followers. They'd all been in hiding over the Sabbath. It was, as I said, only two women who were there at the tomb, so it was them I spoke to. It was early, just as the sun came up. It was a peaceful and quiet time of the day. It seemed like all the trouble of the past few days just kind of melted away. The women had come with spices and perfume for the body. But of course there was no body, just me. "Don't be afraid," I said. That's what we always have to say. Then I said the words that I'd been rehearsing. Words which would around which time would revolve. Words which would be the starting point for a whole new religion. Words which would echo down the centuries. And yet there was no one there to hear them, except for two weeping women. "He's not here," I said. "He has been raised." It didn't sound as triumphant as I thought it would. It came out more gentle and reassuring. "You're looking for Jesus of Nazareth, who was crucified," I said. "He is not here. He's been raised." And then I showed them the empty tomb and told them to go and tell others. I don't think they still really had any idea what was going on.
He was the first man I ever met who looked at me as if I really mattered, who was interested in me as a person. Usually the men I met were only interested in my reputation or what I might do for them. You might say I was a woman of questionable morals. But Jesus was different with me. He looked right inside me. It was as if he could see everything. He made me feel fantastic about myself, though bad about what I was doing. He could see everything, all the pain, the hurt, the demons. "Mary," he said, "your sins are forgiven." I trembled from head to foot. I'll never forget his voice, so deep and warm and tender. He made me feel clean all over, as if I had been plunged into a lovely warm bath, and I was clean inside as well as out. I'm not really a sentimental type of person. I tend to leave the hearts and the roses to the poets and the hymn writers. But this garden is a special place for me. I come here whenever I can. It was here that they buried him. I had watched him die. Crucified. I cried my eyes out for him. I was scared. All of a sudden I was lost. He wasn't going to be around to look after me anymore. Everything I'd had, everything he'd given me, it was gone. I think when he died, I died with him. All the hope, the warm, comfortable feeling of being accepted and wanted, all that was gone. I had come here to say a final goodbye, to help put the spices on his body. But he wasn't there. The tomb where they laid his body, it was empty. He must have been in the garden all the time. I mistook him for the gardener at first. But then he spoke, and there was something in his voice, something familiar, like a fragment of a song you can't quite remember. And anyway, you don't expect a dead man to talk to you, do you? "Mary." That was all he said. That was all he needed to say. With that one word, my name seemed to hang like a heartbeat. And then I was running to him, "Mary." That was all he said. That was all he needed to say. Jesus, he's quite amazing. My life was changed forever that morning.
And so it's Easter, a word beginning with E. And I've got three other words beginning with E for you this morning. We've already done the events. And now I want to look a wee bit more at the emotions. There were four different groups of people involved. And we've heard from three of them this morning already. There was the guards at the tomb. There were the priests and the Pharisees. Strangely, no one was available to comment from that department. There was the angel who represents God and all of heaven. And there were the women, some of Jesus' followers. Let's look very briefly at each of these groups and just ask, what did they feel? The priests and the Pharisees, well, there's lots of emotions there. There's surprise, there's anger, there's worry, and there's confusion, and they're a bit perplexed, and they're a bit afraid. These men thought that they were in control. In fact, the opposite was true. They were being controlled. It was God who was in control. They were afraid more than anything else. They were afraid of the power of Rome, afraid of losing their positions of privilege, afraid of there being a widespread bloodshed in Jerusalem as the Roman occupiers put down an uprising. But these men weren't evil. They were trapped by their traditions, trapped by their rituals. They saw themselves as serving God and leading God's chosen people. The name of God and his holy temple were to be revered and honoured. According to their interpretation of the law, of God's law, this Jesus was a blasphemer. Jesus had dishonoured God's name, and he had threatened the destruction of God's holy temple. And Jesus had also been a threat to political stability. That was the reason that they got the Romans to execute him. It seems, though, that from Matthew's gospel, that these men, despite their hostility to Jesus, they had been listening to what he was saying, about his resurrection. You heard what they said. It's written in Matthew's gospel. We remember that while that liar was still alive, he said. They had been listening. And as far as they were concerned, what Jesus had predicted was impossible. They called it a lie. But they'd taken precautions. They just wanted to be sure. They didn't want Jesus' disciples to steal the body and proclaim the resurrection. They wanted to silence Jesus' disciples. They wanted an end to this whole affair. But with the guards' report, the priests and the Pharisees are thrown into doubt, thrown into confusion. They knew they'd sealed the tomb. They knew it had been guarded well. And they, of course, knew that they hadn't taken the body. And now they had the guards' report, a report of angels and light and an earthquake and an empty tomb. These priests and these Pharisees were worried and confused and afraid. Their response was to pay the guards off, to buy their silence, in fact, to buy them to tell a different story. And there are people like that today, people who feel threatened by Jesus. People who want to stay in control of their lives and don't want to surrender to him. What about the guards? Again, there was surprise, and of course there would be worry as they went back to report. And they were a bit confused. And I'm sure they were a bit afraid. But I think they ended up maybe the happiest of everyone there. Short-term happiness. There's not a lot to say about them. In the short term, these men came out of the situation well. They had done their duty, though perhaps not as effectively as they should have done. But despite this, they would not be disciplined, and they had been paid. So they must have been happy, but confused. These men had been present at the resurrection, one of the most monumental events in the whole of human history. And yet, they had no real idea what was going on. And there are lots of people like that today. They may live alongside Christians. They may hear the Christian gospel. But they don't see anything in it for them. They're quite happy with the world as it is and what the world can offer them. And they're willing to accept any short-term happiness, any windfall that comes along. Our task as Christians is to reach out to these people, to let them see the relevance of the gospel for their lives. And there was the angel. I don't really know what the angel was feeling. A bit of artistic license. He was a bit disappointed that there wasn't a big crowd, but I just made that up. But of all the characters that were there that morning, he was the only one that knew what was going on. The only person who really knew what was happening. And all he could do was tell and show the evidence and allow those who had come and heard and seen to make up their own minds. And again, to a very large extent, that is what we have to do as 21st century followers of Jesus. To tell people, to show them the evidence, and let them make up their own mind. And then we come to the women who came to the tomb. Sadness, surprise, fear, uncertainty. Again, a bit confused, perplexity. But a big element of joy. Mary Magdalene and the other Mary, Matthew writes, went to look at the tomb. Matthew says nothing about why they went. They just went to look. It was early morning, so it would have been a safe time, a quiet time. Perhaps they had just gone to mourn, to weep by the tomb. But as it turns out, they get swept up in one of the big dramatic events in the Bible, as I said, possibly the biggest, most dramatic event in all of history. And they're not just spectators like the guards. They have a major part to play in this resurrection story. It all seems to have happened very quickly. The earthquake, the angels, the guards like dead men, the empty tomb. And there's an urgency in the way the angel speaks. Come and see. Go quickly now and tell. And then they meet the risen Jesus. You know, when they'd set out that morning, they couldn't have expected any of this to happen. In the past week, they had seen all their expectations apparently turned to dust. And now, even before this dust has settled, there's yet another turn of events. But perhaps they had listened to Jesus' predictions about his resurrection. They were the only two who had sufficient faith, perhaps, to at least go and look. So is that why they came on the third day to the tomb? These two women, as it turned out, didn't seem to question the angel's instructions in any way. They heard his announcement. They saw the empty tomb, and immediately they were off running to tell the news to the others. And with very mixed emotions, Matthew tells us, afraid, yet filled with joy, they ran to tell his disciples. Have you ever felt like that? Getting news that you think is just too good to be true, and you're afraid it's not, yet you're full of joy that it might be. And then they meet the risen Jesus. They took hold of his feet. This was no apparition. This was no ghost. This was Jesus, his solid body that they could take hold of. He was once more alive. And they worshipped him. Matthew starts his gospel with the Magi worshipping the child Jesus. And he ends his gospel with the women from the tomb worshipping the risen Jesus. So how do you feel about Jesus and the resurrection? Are you convinced? Are you ready to tell others about it? Are you prepared to worship at Jesus' feet? When you first heard the good news of Jesus and the free gift of his salvation, were you filled with mixed emotions, afraid that it might not be true, but joyful at the prospect that it actually was being addressed to you? Or are you a skeptic, like the others who had to come and see for themselves? Or are you like the priests and the Pharisees, afraid that it might be true, afraid that it will destroy your comfortable situation? Or are you like the guards, just taking life as it comes, accepting any windfalls that may come your way, but not thinking too much about anything? I want to look very briefly, can make this work, at the evidence. Many years ago, I was challenged to look at the evidence. A friend of mine said, "You can't be a Christian without the resurrection," and challenged me to go and look at the evidence. And that's what set me on the path to faith. And for those who still doubt, and maybe to help those who would like to convince others, let me just briefly run through the evidence. There was an empty tomb. I don't have them up here. There was an empty tomb. On the first Easter morning, the women came to the tomb expecting to see it sealed, the body would be inside, and the tomb would be as it was on the Friday night. But the tomb was open and the tomb was empty. Not only was the tomb open and empty, the body was missing. Both Matthew, Mark, and Luke in their Gospels, they tell of angels proclaiming that Jesus had risen. And John also says that, but he adds the detail that the grave clothes were left behind. Was the body stolen? This is a suggestion that a lot of people make, but it just doesn't stand up. Firstly, why steal the body and leave behind the linen sheet? Not only would the sheet have made the body easier to carry, as our military man told us, but it was possibly the only thing of any value in the tomb. Secondly, if Jesus' enemies had taken the body, for whatever reason, they could have, and they would have, produced the body to disprove the early teaching of the resurrection. That didn't happen. Thirdly, if Jesus' followers had taken the body, they would have been preaching a fabrication. They could never have sustained preaching as they did with such conviction, nor could they have displayed such endurance in the face of suffering, even going to violent deaths themselves, and recount the story. And then you have the risen Jesus. All the gospel accounts emphasize the fact that the disciples were not expecting to see Jesus alive again. And he had to give them proof that it really was Jesus who had appeared to them, and that he was not a ghost, not an apparition, as a lot of people maintain. But the big thing that sealed it for me was the transformation of the disciples. If you look at the change which took place in these men, just between the end of the Gospels and the beginning of the book of Acts, these fearful, timid, broken men were transformed. Their fear had turned to boldness. They had become convinced that Jesus had become alive. I'll leave you to consider the evidence, to take it and share it with others, to tell other people of the great events of Easter Sunday. The disciples weren't expecting Jesus to rise from the dead, despite Jesus having told them. But the book of Acts shows the disciples' transformation, shows a transformation from the depths of despair on Good Friday to men brimming with confidence and overflowing with joy. And that's how we should be this Easter day, as we celebrate the resurrection of Jesus, the single event around which human history revolves. The women left the tomb, afraid yet filled with joy. But we don't need to be afraid. The resurrection of Jesus is true. And because of the resurrection, we can have confidence that our God has power over everything, even power over death. Amen.